How did your career come to an end, Alistair?
Well, I again, this, I mean, it's inconceivable now that you could try to do two major sports, but I was a cricketer. I was a cricketer by trade. I mean, I started off being a cricketer and only came to play a bit of rugby, as I've described, as something to do before I played cricket for Gloucestershire, and then it sort of accelerated from there, and I got picked for England, and so then I found myself as an England rugby player on for one part of the season, or for one part of the year, and a Gloucester cricketer for the other, and I kept trying to play the both, and I kept getting lots and lots of ankle injuries. They discovered that I was born with something wrong with my ankles, and it's like a car with shock absorbers, that if you don't have the shock absorbers, eventually things grind and crunch and break and snap, and it's not a very good ride anyway. And that's basically what was wrong with my ankles, and I kept getting ankle injuries. So I played maybe first class rugby for 7 years maximum, and I had about six ankle injuries in that time, and each of them was slightly worse than the last. So I flaked bits of bone off, and I tore tendons and ligaments and things, and it took longer and longer to recover from. And although I kept trying to play the both, and I went on a tour with England in 79 to the Far East, non-caps, so we didn't get any caps for it, but and I was still trying to play both. And in the 79-80 season, I came back from the tour and was, right, I'm going to really make it in the rugby. But I got injured again. This was my knee this time, and I didn't play much in the 79-80 season, one of which was playing for Gloucestershire in the county final up in Lancashire. I was playing in the centre by then, and I played a quarter final for Gloucestershire at outside half in that year. But those were one of very few games I actually played in that season, and I had lots of injuries, and I was sort of available for the Lions tour in 1980, but didn't get picked. Played for Gloucestershire at cricket in the 1980 season and had a number of other injuries. I smashed my nose up fielding at short leg, but I also, the ankle injury started flaring up in the cricket season. And the big difference was that cricket was a professional game with a very small P and even smaller pay packets. But cricket was a professional game, and they actually sort of said, look, we've got to get this ankle sorted out. Whereas in the rugby seasons, I'd just been muddling along and getting a bit of treatment or strapping it up or whatever. And they said, no, you've got to get it actually looked at. And I went to see somebody, and they just said, look, you've been born with these bad ankles. If you want to carry on playing cricket, you've got to stop playing rugby, because the ankles will not survive too many more bashes and bumps and things on the rugby field. And I got to the point where I was starting to feel that my ankles weren't supporting me in the way I wanted them to, and I was starting to feel I wasn't running as well as I was, and I was losing a bit of pace, and I was starting to feel less confident about my legs, about my ankles, than I was. And when this guy said, look, if you want to carry on playing cricket, you've got to give up rugby, I thought for a long time, and then talked over with my wife and decided that I had to, that was the sort of, if I wanted to keep playing cricket, which was a longer term career, longer term sport, etc., that's what I'd have to do. So in 1980, I decided not to play rugby. And again, this is how different it was in those days. In 1980, I just didn't turn up at Bristol for pre-season training, and it took until about midway through September before anybody noticed I wasn't there. And then somebody said, are you available for next week? I said, well, look, you know, I've had to give it up. And, you know, so you've given up. And again, in those days, rugby was sort of an amateur thing that people did alongside their jobs and their way of life, and, you know, sometimes you couldn't do it, so people just, oh, well, he's given up. You know, nobody made a great big fuss about it. It was just, oh, he's given up rugby, going to carry on with cricket, sort of thing.
And how long was it then before you became involved in broadcasting?
Well, I played for another 3 years at cricket. So the 83 season was my last season. The ankles were starting to interfere with my enjoyment of and my ability to play cricket as well as I wanted to. And I knew that they would never last me over a 5-day test match. So even if I, you know, got myself together and was good enough to play test cricket, my ankles wouldn't let me do it. And I knew cricket was never a well-paid job, so you had to get your next career sorted out, what you're going to do afterwards. And I was a teacher by trade, and a job came up which would require full-time teaching. So I chose to go into full-time teaching in 83. September 83, but I was asked at various times by local radio to come along and chat about rugby and to be on the sideline and that sort of thing. And I found I could do that quite well and enjoyed it. And it was a much better way of watching rugby than than being a school teacher and out on the playing field. There's a much better way of doing it. And I started doing that, and then Radio Bristol recommended me to, or somebody from Radio Bristol was up at the BBC in London, and they needed somebody to do a match as a summariser in 84, I think. And they said, somebody said, oh, Alistair lives around the corner, he's done a bit of radio, you know, whatever. And so I got a few jobs as the expert summariser for Radio 2 in 84. And then somebody said, why didn't you... Peter West, it was a great Peter West. We were doing a game, and I was the summariser, and he and Ian Robertson were the commentators. And there was a gap where, in those days, you always had to go for the second half football commentary. So we did the first half, and then off to the second half football commentary. So Peter, we were sort of in the commentary box, and Peter West said, "You know, you seem to know your way about rugby, and so what about trying to commentate? And I'll be the summariser." So I got the microphone, and we just practiced with me saying, you know, so-and-so's got the ball going down the left, and, you know, all this sort of commentary stuff. And Peter said, well, you know, you've sort of got an understanding of what's going on. Ever thought of doing this full-time? And I said, no, I'm a teacher. And then Ian Robertson said, well, I used to be a teacher, but I've moved into broadcasting. Starmer Smith used to be a teacher. He's moved into broadcasting. What about it? Why don't you try it? And within a year, a job came up in the BBC, and I applied for it, and along with, so I'm told, 1,500 other people, most of whom were in from local radio, but the BBC took a chance. I knew a bit about rugby and a bit about cricket, and that they would be able to train me to be a broadcaster. So I became a broadcaster in 85 and did my first commentary in about 86, I suppose. Yeah, and then they didn't really send me out to do club games until probably about 87 or 88, when, of course, if you did any club games, you tended to get sent to Kingsham from time to time.
And what was it like at Kingsham?
Well, my big memory about Kingsham was, again, it was typical Gloucester fans' humour, was that in the old days, you're in the old stand, there was a very thin, narrow press box, and you had to be plugged in at one point, and then you had, because of junior senior, and it's the thing I didn't realise, but you know, the senior reporters used to get in there and get their places where they could be right near the halfway line, and the junior reporters took your places elsewhere. So you'd arrive at Kingsham, however early you got there, there would be some of the senior reporters have got their stuff on the desks, so you'd find that you're stuck out on the side. And I got there and was told, you've got to sit over there. So I wasn't given one of the best seats, but you also have, when you're broadcasting, you've got this big box called a kubi, which you have to plug into a telephone point. It's a sort of specialised, it's an ISDN point or something like that. And that was way, way down there, past all of these senior reporters who were already installed and established and so on. So I said, excuse me, guys, can I just plug in? So I wormed my way past them and pushed this plug into the wall. And then went back to my place and dialed up and talked to people, talked to the thing, said, yes, here I am at Kingsham, blah, blah, blah. Send a first report, that was fine. And then I thought, well, I didn't hear anything, but then I was still new to the equipment, so I wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to be hearing, whether I was supposed to be hearing anything back, or because they didn't want me, they would... So it sort of went quiet, but I was watching the game and making notes and enjoying things. And then there was this tannoy announcement, and say, would Alistair Hignall please phone his office on the tenor? And everybody goes, "Oi, Alice!" So they all turn around and they go, "Oi, Alice!" And I'm like, "Oh, shit." So I had to find, again, in those days, not everybody had a phone and there was no mobile phone, so I had to borrow a mobile phone. So I was like, what's going on? He said, you're not plugged in, we can't hear you. So then I had to go past all the senior journalists and plug this bloody thing in. Of course, all the fans would go, oh, what's wrong, Alice? Another thing you've got bloody wrong. So even as a journalist, I was getting banter from the Shed.
Well, it's nice to be remembered.
Well, it's nice to be remembered. And I have to say that the Shed were... And the Gloucester fans have been brilliant throughout my career. I mean, that time and ever since, we've established different types of broadcasting from that long low stand on the the long low row of seats and the old stand, which was great. And I've always had great rapport with the Gloucester fans. Again, another memory from the broadcasting days and related to my multiple sclerosis was that one of my memories and one of the reasons I knew that I had a problem was I came to interview Richard Hill, who was the director of rugby at Gloucester at the time. I did the match, commentary match, and in those days, just along from towards the what used to be the Tump End, that stand, whose stand is that now? Far end, left hand side.
I can't remember the hospitality
boxes, suites. Yeah. Anyway, along towards that end, they used to have a press box, which was actually a converted porter cabin. Mm. Very good bacon sandwiches, by the way. converted porter cabin, and that's where the press conference would be at the end of a game. They got to the point where they got the directors of rugby in to talk to the journos, and the written journalists would be there with their pens and papers. But because it was a very hot, sweaty, fetid room with lots and lots of noise going, and you couldn't do your radio interviews in the same room. So I remember saying to Richard, look, can we just go outside, back outside, where it is freezing cold, but can you come outside and I can just talk to you about the game? And I remember holding a microphone in front of him and asking him a question, and watching my right hand just start shaking completely uncontrollably, and there was a hand with the microphone and it was just wobbling like this, and I was swearing at myself, saying, come on, and I couldn't make it, my wrist stay still, and it was just shaking, and in the end I sort of grabbed it with this hand, and I was holding the mini disc as well, and being contorted over, trying to remember all the questions I was supposed to be asking, and at the same time wondering what on earth had happened to my arm, and why I couldn't control it. And that was one of the early signs that I realised that I had some problems with the nervous system, as it were, and we had that investigated afterwards. But whenever people ask me about MS, I always say, yeah, that was one time when I realised, and it was at King's Home. Mm-hmm. So that was a memory. And again, a memory of King's Home with the MS was the fantastic thing that Don Caskey did of the Cherry Pickers. The Cherry Pickers, yeah, is the old boys' side. Well, he organised a fundraising match between the Gloucester Old Boys and the Bristol Old Players, and we had it at Cheltenham. And he organised a fantastic thing. Got Phil Vickery, current England player, turned out to play. Shouldn't have done him. Clive Woodward would have killed him. But all of the Gloucester boys and the Bristol boys turned out to play, and Stuart Barnes came along to commentate. And so it's a wonderful day out. And Don, and the Cherry Pickers really organised it fantastically well, and then presented me with a cheque on King's Home Stadium a couple of matches later, and it was just beautiful. The whole crowd sort of, were there showing the sort of appreciation and solidarity that rugby folk do have for one of their own, if you like, who's fallen on, slightly hard times. But I remember them asking me to come out, and the whole crowd actually just, showing terrific support. Nice. So again, that's a very, very warm memory I've got of King's Home to go with all of the Alice jibes.
Well, they might have felt warm to you. I bet they're still calling you Alice, weren't they?
Absolutely. I wouldn't expect anything else.
Yeah. During your times there as a commentator, are there particular matches or players that stand out in your memory?
Oh. In my time as a working for HTV, and I was working for television then, I came and worked for HTV from 89 to 96. I was around for all the great Bath-Gloucester showdowns. And the 6-3 at King's Home was a special game where there were people were everywhere. They were on trees. Well, they weren't on trees, but they were on the top of every building you could think of. They were crammed in. And it was one of those really raucous bullring atmospheres. And it was so tight and so tense that there was no, you couldn't possibly guess who was going to win it, and there was a whole series of cup games, wasn't there? There was that one, and there was another one where Kevin Dunn scored a try in one of the games for Gloucester. That might have been a league match, because Bath tended to win the cup games. Gloucester would win the league games at King's Home, but the whole series of Bath Gloucester games were just absolutely fantastic and raucous and red-blooded, and great to commentate on and great to be a reporter at, because of the atmosphere, and because of the passion that was engendered. Particular games, I'm sure I'd remember them eventually, but none particularly stand out. The new stand is brilliant for broadcasters. Right. The old stand was
not. You experienced the new stadium as a commentator?
Yeah, no, I just had a couple of, a few matches, maybe one season there, but the old stand was difficult for myself when I became more and more disabled, because the press box was over one side, and then you had to work your way through the crowd to get to your broadcasting thing, which was by the other 22, the sort of road end. And it was harder work getting in and out, and physically it was difficult because it was quite cramped. And, you know, you always had to get to Gloucester early and plug in early and get set up early. And then because I was always on the end of the thing, you had to keep standing up to let people through and that sort of thing. And therefore it was a hardship. But it was great to be amongst the crowd because, you know, after a while you got used to all the people who stood just in front of you, and there was always a bit of banter going on. But the new stand is fantastic for, particularly for disabled people, because you've got a lift, you go up to the right part and you can plug in, you can get sorted out very, very easily. And the viewing, again, I mean, the old stand, the pillars got in the way a bit. But the new stand, you've got a terrific, terrific view for most of the ground.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very good. Any games particularly spring to mind? Was it the Agen game? Was it Agen came there and Thao Thao Uni Baka, the giant Fijian, just pummel Gloucester.
Oh,
yeah. Just
well, they were just a bigger side than Gloucester.
They had a huge,
massive
huge
side,
bloke called
they?
David on the other wing. It was absolutely huge
was
as well.
Huge.
So yeah, I remember that game. But actually, when you have a different sort of viewpoint, when you're commentating, you don't get the bigger picture of what it means or who's doing what or everything else. You just got to get the names right, you've got to get the scorers right, you've got to do this right and so on. And you tend not to get an overall appreciation of the game. So that's my get-out clause.